B-Pod Studios.
These guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
This may feel strong, but you people are stupid.
OMG. It's Felger and Maz, 95 The Sports Hub.
From the Town Fair Tire Studio, Felger and Maz, 98.5 of Sports Up, simulcast NBC Sports Boston. Again, no Felger, no Maz today. You have Jim Murray and Adam Jones in for the guys. Marshall Hook over in my normal spot. And the Celtics, the IT love fest that took the stink off last night's loss to the Denver Nuggets. This is what we opened up with today. I thought it was a hideous loss. I thought it showed all the Celtics' weaknesses that have been out there all season, all on full display against, yeah, they're a better team, but Denver really did give that thing away, especially in the third quarter last night, Jones. But bad team defense, three-point shooting that's not as good as it needs to be, bad turnovers, out-rebounded, which shouldn't have been a surprise considering Denver's front court. But overall, gross.
Oh, yeah, bad loss. Bad loss. The way that they failed to execute down the stretch. And I said this earlier, I'll reiterate. Denver, you know, was down late in the third quarter. They evened it up on just a horrible end-of-quarter exchange where Brad Stevens called the timeout. They didn't have to call. He actually copped to that after the game that, hey, I screwed up the situation. Of course he did. The timeout was called. The Celtics lost possession. Denver tied the game on a defensive breakdown in the final second of the third. Now it's tied going into the fourth quarter, but still you're tied at home in the fourth quarter against a team that's better than you, but you were in that game. And then they had horrible shot selection down the stretch. They were giving up easy buckets. They couldn't hit layups at the other end of the floor. The lead went from tied at the start of the fourth quarter to ballooning to 10 or 11, like it was a double-digit game, down at the end of the game. So Denver really ran them off their own floor in the fourth quarter. If you told me going in yesterday around this time that Denver's going to win, I wouldn't have thought much about it. I'd say, yeah, okay, that makes sense. The way it went down in that fourth quarter was brutal. And furthermore, I don't think anyone was that locked in for the Nuggets last night. I think Jokic was pretty good, my guy. I think was pretty good. I think Barton was good. It's not like you face Jamal Murray hanging 48 on you and he's just unconscious, shooting the lights out, and it's just one of those nights. I think Denver was fine. I don't think they were anything special or spectacular. Maybe they're a better team on paper, but the way that game was playing out for three quarters, the Celtics should have had a better result, and that's why I think it's a bad loss.
Yeah, but now you can add Denver to the list of these Western Conference teams, Utah, the Clippers, Houston, that have now swept them in this what has felt like a slog of a season. I didn't think Brad Stevens had a good night again. He didn't have one in the win on Saturday against that bad Hawks team. But I now question, like, do you know how to use timeouts? Do you have your finger on the pulse of this team? Because it didn't feel like it, especially in that third quarter. It was just awful. He's had a bad year. Like, at times, I felt like he's skated when it's come to criticism from fans and, you know, media idiots like us.
So I think he's had a bad year for sure. And Lord knows I've been on him over the course of the year. Like I said, I actually feel the opposite. I think there have been points where it's like, Ainge has gotten off a little easier maybe than Brad Stevens, but I would agree he's had a down year. I mean, he's unquestionably had a down year, and I think he's struggled with rotations all year long. It's almost like there's too many options, and that overwhelms him, and I think he struggled to manage some of these egos, and whether that's end of game, you know, the Orlando game, I think, is a good example of that, like just overthinking an end-of-the-game situation, whether that is your rotations, where Kyrie was trying to get into the game last night, but Marcus Smart was out there as the lead, ballooned for Denver. I think he struggled with that all year long. So, yeah, I still think he's a good coach who's having a bad year, and maybe they need to go back to the drawing board in the offseason and say, hey, maybe giving him 10, 11 you know, high-quality NBA options, maybe that can be overwhelming at times, and maybe he overthinks things, and that's one of the things I wonder about the team this year.
Yeah, bad night for Jason Tatum, a bad night for Jaylen Brown,
yep.
Who I think we agree he should be in the starting five. But you mentioned Danny Ainge. So this just posted within the last, like, 30 minutes or so, BostonHerald.com, Steve Bulpet. who spoke with Danny Ainge. A lot of good quotes here. I wish we had the actual sound, but we don't. But it's funny. There's a not-so-subtle shot, I think, that Ainge takes at Jaylen Brown and how he fell asleep last night. I think we could all see that in that inbounds pass where he's like, huh, what? Score.
Yeah, 1 second left in the you can't focus for 1 second at the end of the third quarter.
So here's Ainge talking about the team overall, and this is what the column is about. Like, what do you see this many games in as you're heading into the playoffs? What's your feel for this year's Celtics team? And Danny Ainge says, quote, I feel like there's a lot of good things I see in our team. I feel like we need to be healthy. We need to be right. And I feel like our minds are getting the right in the right place, and that's a good thing. Against Denver, we weren't thinking. But it wasn't a lack of effort. It was falling asleep on some plays or not paying attention. But it wasn't some deep-rooted issues that can't be fixed. We could have played well and still lost against a team like Denver. They're a very good team. And this was really your takeaway from this last night, Hook, is that Denver's just good, so you can't be all that surprised, and the Celtics just aren't on their level.
Well, I think maybe the second thing is more apt. Like, and I guess as I've listened today, I've refined this because it sounds to you, or it sounds to me, like you guys are basically saying that at some level, or at least last night, the Celtics were the better team and they blew the opportunity to win this game.
Yeah, I mean, they again, at worst, it was a tie game to start the fourth quarter. You're at home with 12 minutes to go in a game where you've been tied with them for the first three. You should win that game.
My point is, I just think Denver's the better team, and it finally showed up in the fourth quarter. I don't know that it was as much a failing. Obviously, the Celtics had failings, particularly right there at the end of the third, but I also think Denver just upped its game to where it's been this season and why it is that they're now tied with Golden State for the top spot in the West. So I give a little more credence to Denver, or I give a little more credit, I should say, to Denver for being good. And ultimately, my main takeaway actually has nothing to do with Denver. It has to do with the Celtics team that I look at it and say, well, ultimately, whether it's, you know, when they blow leads to mediocre, to bad teams, whether they blow leads to good teams like this one, maybe that's just who they are. And I think in the end, this is why, regardless of what seed they end up, regardless of who they're going to play in the first or second round, ultimately, I don't think they're going very far because they're just not built for it. Not this season.
Well, Kyrie Irving obviously believes his team can flip a switch, right? You go back about a month ago after that god-awful loss to the Chicago Bulls. Afterwards, he's not shaken up by it, and he's asked why, and he's like, well, because I'm here. And, well, he also said this not too long ago as well.
Point now where you just don't worry about the standings. You just get back to playing good basketball, and then wherever you stand when the season ends.
You can't worry about the standings now. It's too late in the season. I mean, you know, obviously the 4 or 5 spot, but, you know, it's pretty 1-2 is pretty much locked up, 1-2-3. So, yeah, just play to as long as we get there. I can't wait for this, all this other BS about regular season and keep getting better and talking over and over and over and again about what we can do to keep getting better in the regular season. I just want to be at the highest level playing. I mean, that's what I'm here for.
Yeah. They'll be fine once we get to the playoffs. I'm here. We can flip the switch. Doesn't use that, but that's what we know. That's a flip the switch type of comment, right?
In as many words, yeah.
If you want further proof that this team is not on the same page from top to bottom this year, it just makes it so frustrating. This is more from the Steve Bulpet column that just posted BostonHerald.com not too long ago. Ainge asked, do you think the Celtics can set an alarm for mid-April? Quote, yeah, I don't believe you can flip a switch, he said. I'll go on, but that's really all. This is the money quote of the column. Yeah, I don't believe you can flip a switch, which completely contradicts everything you just heard there from Kyrie Irving, everything you've heard from Kyrie Irving over the last 4 weeks when they've had ugly losses like last night. Danny Ainge, who's been there, who's done that, who's won titles, is the GM of this club. Yeah, I don't believe you can flip a switch. But I see a lot of things I like on our team. I like a lot of our energy. We have lapses, but I feel a lot of it is inexperience and maybe communication that we need to get better at. Yeah, you think?
Yeah.
At this stage of the season, we're still playing lineups out there that probably haven't played much together. Ooh, is this a shot at the coach? We saw Al Horford and Aaron Baines out there more than maybe we've seen all year, and that was the foundation of our defense last year. Again, I'm not making excuses. I'm not panicking. I feel much better about our team today than I did 2 weeks ago, end quote. Sure, yeah, because there's little less gutlessness. They didn't end up losing to the Hawks on Saturday. They didn't end up blowing it to the Kings. But, yeah, I don't believe you can flip a switch. I really don't think you can either.
And I mean, there are very few examples of teams that have done that, and most of the time there are teams that have already won. You know, the Celtics making a run back in 2010. LeBron's teams have done it a handful of times, like, usually it's teams that, as you said with Danny Ainge, teams and guys who have been there and done that. And this team, you know, outside of Kyrie, and he wasn't the leader of that team when the Cavs won, these guys have not been there nor done that. So, yeah, they don't fit the mold of teams that have flipped the proverbial switch in the past.
Turn your mic on, Jim. And now, this loss last night also puts more importance on tomorrow night's game against the Philadelphia 76ers. We'll explain why, along with your phone calls coming up here. If you want to talk about last night's Celtics loss, 617-779-0985. We'll get to that coming up here. It's Jim Murray and Adam Jones in for Felger and Mass.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mass.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5,
the Sports Hub.
Sports Hub.
Sports Hub.
Sports Hub.
Felger and Maz, 98.5 of Sports Up. Again, it's Jim Murray and Adam Jones in for the guys today and for most of the week. Celtics sloppy. It was more of a Celtics loss than a Denver win, in my opinion. I think Jones as well, as the Celtics fall last night at home. 114-105 was the final. But, hey, you know, maybe people aren't all that amped up about it for one of two reasons, Jones. Maybe at this point a lot of Celtics fans are just kind of throwing their hands collectively in the air and said, "Eh." Well, much like Kyrie Irving, get me to the playoffs, we'll be fine.
I was going to say, doesn't it feel like that's what the team's done?
Or is it because it didn't stink that bad because, well, it was such a fun night with the return of Isaiah Thomas last night.
It was a fun little night, wasn't it?
First time out of the first quarter, we get to have the video montage. And don't, I know I'm in a mocking tone here. I can't help myself because it does feel like, you know, people don't care about the loss as much as they probably should because it was hideous and it was a good team. And now they're 3-7 in their last 10 against playoff teams. But be that as it may, let's all have fun because IT is back. But it was deserved and it was a good night. It was nice. It was nice for him. And it felt like, at the very least, he did appreciate it.
Oh, he definitely appreciated it. Like, I have this conflict with Isaiah where I like the player and I rooted for him, but there were times where he was just a little too over the top, and I feel like last night he was bordering on that. And I get it. It ends up being your night, and I think from the Celtics standpoint, they handled it with class. You know, Malone even got him into the game. Isaiah clearly appreciated it. Like, I think a lot of that was handled perfectly. I just think when Isaiah starts going into, well, I could be an all-star and an all-NBA player, and we would have won a title if I were still there. Like, when he's laying that stuff on, now he's gone a little too far. But he deserved the ovation last night. He deserved that moment. Some of it was self-inflicted because he shot down his first opportunity to have that last year, and then Paul Pierce shot down the second opportunity a season ago. So I don't think he handled that great a year ago either, but he finally got his moment, and there were some nice parts to that. I mean, him saying that Boston is home and talking about how the city supported him after his sister's passing, and that's when he realized that this is home. I mean, that was a good moment.
And genuine, and I think that he has 100%. Been humbled because I didn't really like the way he handled himself leaving, and I get why he was upset. Like, you know, he was thrown out like yesterday's trash, you know, like it wasn't handled well on both sides. But when he went to Cleveland, I thought it was like, dude, why are you acting this way? It's LeBron's team and LeBron's a pain in the ass, but still, who the hell are you? But I think last night, one of the other reasons I think he was so appreciative of it, it was the first time in a long time that he's had a good night in the NBA. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's been a long time before he's had a good night in his basketball life, and even though he played limited minutes.
Oh, he was miserable on the floor last night, but it was a great night for him, right? He got to feel appreciated again in an NBA basketball game in a building in a city that means a lot to him. So, no, it's probably the best night as a professional basketball player, even though it had very little to do with his basketball game, that he's had in a long, long time. I'd agree with that.
But for some of you guys, especially those of you that were there, did you get too wrapped up in the damn thing? It was Denver. What the hell do you want? They're a good team. Two in the West. I didn't really have high expectations anyway. No, they gave that away. And it puts more pressure on them tomorrow night to win in Philadelphia. And understandably, I can understand why you would be confident about them going into Philadelphia and beating the 76ers, because they own that ass. They're in their head. They're 3-0 against them this year. They embarrassed them last year in the playoffs. I get it. But they're healthy. They're playing really well right now with the 76ers. They've won four straight. But it's important they win tomorrow night, the Celtics, because if they don't, the odds of them getting the 3 seed, it drops off a cliff with a loss to the 76ers tomorrow night. And I'm reading from Boston Sports Inf on Twitter. If you're not following him, always great stats and facts from him. He's not like throwing crap against the wall like most of us here on the radio. Boston Sports Inf on Twitter. He didn't have room for the O. He writes that a Philly win tonight over Charlotte would put the 76ers up 3 games over the Celtics. So heading into tomorrow night's game, both teams would have 11 games left. If the 76ers win, they'll be up 4 games with only 9 to play, which in itself is virtually impossible or would be considered a major choke if the 76ers blew it, considering they have the easiest schedule, strength of schedule, the rest of the way compared to Indiana and the Celtics. So, you know, with the way the Sixers are playing, like, there's now, this feels like it's almost kind of a must win for the Celtics tomorrow night if they're trying to get the 3 seed, which is still in play mathematically, but I don't know. They can kiss it goodbye. They lose this game tomorrow night. Like, that's a given.
Yeah, and so
but you don't think this matters because you're not afraid of Milwaukee.
I was just going to say, so it really depends on who you want to avoid. I would prefer to avoid Toronto in that second round. I think Toronto is the tougher matchup, and I think they're the better team, even though Milwaukee, you know, is whatever they are in the standings, 2.5 games up on Toronto. Milwaukee's been the best team, you know, pretty much wire to wire at the top of the Eastern Conference all year long. I just like Toronto's roster a lot better than Milwaukee's. Giannis is incredible. You know, he's maybe the future of the NBA after LeBron. I get all of that, but I don't love the Brook Lopez's and Eric Bledsoe's of the world. Middleton's a nice player, but he's having a down year. Brogdon's hurt. So I would much rather get, I don't know about much rather, but I'd rather get the Bucks in the second round. So I think the ideal seed for the Celtics actually is 4. You're at home in that first round. Then you'd get Milwaukee in round 2, assuming Toronto doesn't pass them by in the final 10 games or so. I think that'd be the best path. So I personally am not bothered about that 3 seed. But if you'd rather face Toronto in round 2, and maybe you feel that way, I think a lot of people out there do, then the 3 seed's pretty important.
Yeah, I think I've felt for a while they're not going to make it past the second round. And I think Milwaukee is a problem. I think they have been all year. Giannis is playing at an MVP level. And if they have home court, which they will, Celtics aren't going to. I thought the Celtics, I thought that first round series last year was underrated, and that Milwaukee was better competition than many people gave him credit for, including the guy who's normally here and Tony.
And the Celtics couldn't win in that building last year.
No, not at all. And Rozier was garbage in that series on the road. But your Celtics thoughts at 617-779-0985. Got a couple open lines you want to join us. We'll go to Dave in Lowell, who wants to get on the coach. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, hey guys. The problem that I think with this team is right from Brad Stevens. This is a coach that shows no emotion ever, never gets in on anybody, walks around that building up and down the floor with his arms crossed like he's smarting everybody else. You can't play for a coach that doesn't have the emotion, and the players show it on the floor, and that's the end result. It starts with him. I think he's a terrible coach, and this team's going nowhere with him leading them. It's just not going to happen. They can be up by 15. They're still shooting three-pointers. And next thing you know, the other team's back in the game, or they're in within 2 or 3. He has no idea, or he has changed nothing with that team. It's the same thing game in and game out. And unless they're hitting threes at a phenomenal clip, they're going to lose.
Feels strong, Dave.
It does.
But I don't need a yeller. I don't necessarily need, like, yeller coach or, like, grab him by the, you know, like, that just doesn't really happen in the
right.
NBA. We're not talking about college hoops here and Bob Knight and that kind of crap.
Right.
I would just like him to be using his timeouts a little bit more appropriately and time-worthy.
Yeah, and I'd like him to, I mean, I think the caller's onto something there. I think he's way harsh, and I don't think Brad's, like, comportment is the issue. But I think when guys don't have it, or when guys are out there bombing away without a conscience, some nights you can limit their minutes. Or you can, every once and then, change your starting lineup outside of an injury. It's the only time he changes his lineup nowadays, is when there's an injury. So I think there are different things he could do, toying around with minutes and rotations and starting lineups, where maybe you light a fire under players without yelling at them. You know, you don't need to be a yeller, as you said, and get in guys' faces, but that would maybe be a way to motivate guys, or at least reward guys like Jaylen Brown, who have been playing well off the bench and deserve to start.
Brent in Shrewsbury, you're next here on Felger and Maz with Murray and Jones. Hey, Brent.
Hey, what's up, guys? So game one this year, they started Horford, Gordon Hayward, Jason Tatum, J. Jaylen Brown and Kyrie, I believe. And then not too far into the season, they put Marcus Morris and Marcus Smart in the starting lineup. And it seemed to work better, but Hayward, I think, was a lot more, you know, he wasn't what he is right now, game one. He's gotten better. So I think they got to shake it up with this lineup. Maybe start Smart and Hayward, Tatum, Smart, Kyrie, Horford. What do you guys think?
Thanks for the call, Brent. I mean, it's now going on 5 weeks that I felt like Jaylen Brown should be in the starting five, but it's still Marcus Morris, and that's not going to change. You feel the same way.
Is that all you would do, though? Because he suggested a lot more. So Brown for Morris, I think, is a no-brainer.
Yeah, I would also put Hayward in and probably take out Smart.
Okay, so I'd be interested in that. I would also be interested in Baines over Smart, and I understand that that changes, you know, your makeup quite a bit, but I think you could start Irving, Brown, Tatum, Horford, Baines. I think you can get away with doing that. I think that would be a fine starting lineup. So I like the idea of Smart injecting something into the second unit with his energy, because I really think that's the main thing he brings to the table. I think it gets overrated, but I acknowledge that exists. And Morris deserves to be on the second unit.
But we keep asking aloud, when it seems so obvious, why not put Brown in over Marcus Morris? When especially during February, when Morris completely went in the tank and he was shooting, 27% from three or whatever the hell it was. And your theory is?
Well, it doesn't make any sense on the basketball court, right, why you wouldn't put Brown in there. So I wonder if Brad knows the room would have a problem with Brown getting into the starting lineup. Like every time there's a shouting match with the team this year, it involves
Jaylen Brown.
Or it's directed at Jaylen. It doesn't really involve Jaylen. It's Kyrie calling out the young players, and Jaylen was the one guy who clapped back. It's Morris shoving him. It's Smart clapping in the corner for a three ball when Brown is running someone over. It's like everything seems to involve him. So I that's me wondering. I'm not telling you I know that answer, but
no, it makes sense. It's the only thing logically that makes sense, because nothing from a basketball standpoint.
It doesn't make sense on the floor the way they've been playing. So maybe it's something else.
How would the coach sound, Jones, if he was trying to figure that out, but he doesn't want to ruin the room or hurt anyone's feelings? Like, how would that sound?
Oh, well, gee willikers, guys. I mean, Jaylen's out there. He's playing really well, but gee, I know you guys can't stand him. I know he gets you guys a little hot under the collar and all bothered, and I try to tell you guys to mind your own beeswax, but gee willikers, I feel like he deserves a spot.
I just needed that. Thank you. We'll take your Celtics calls coming up here. We've got a couple of segments to go. 617-779-0985. We'll get to those. And we'll touch on the Mike Trout contract today. And now that he's going to be getting $500 million from those boring athlete and professional sports. But hey, kudos to Mike Trout. But what's it really mean for Mookie Betts? We'll get to that right after the Sports Hub headlines here with Marshall Hook. It's Felger and Maz, 98.5 of Sports.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger and Mass.
Ow.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
That is hammered out to deep left field. Forget about it. Big fly for Mike Trout, and the Angels have tied this one up at one.
Boring.
I think Mike Trout could raise his profile tomorrow if he decided that he wanted to engage a little more fully, give up some more of his free time. And that's his choice. I mean, that really is his choice. What player marketing takes in today's world, you got to be willing to be out there on social media. You got to be willing to put yourself out there, and you have to devote time to it.
It still makes me laugh that's the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred, talking about Mike Trout, who just got paid nearly $500 million, is going to end up getting paid over $500 million, and near $500 million, over the next 12 years, as he signs a monster deal today with the L.A. Angels, Anaheim Angels, whatever, that irrelevant franchise out in California. A 12-year, $430 million extension with the Angels, the largest contract in professional sports history. Hey, kudos to him. Good for him. It's 2 years ahead of when he would be a free agent. Feels to me, my own take on it, that to sign with the Angels, where you're never going to win, while you're going to get paid, you're certainly not going to have an opportunity to actually win a World Series championship there. not in the next few years at least. So he chose comfort and money over the opportunity to actually play in a bigger market and deal with more scrutiny and, oh, I don't know, maybe have to develop a personality because you end up having to play in, say, Boston or New York or Philadelphia. But no, just be boring Mike Trout, you know, hawking subs for Subway, then commercials that no one will ever remember, and you can go to sleep in your pile of money now out in Anaheim or L.A., wherever the stupid team is. Good for him. But I'm more interested what this means for Mookie Betts because in terms of the timing, with all these deals that you've now seen here recently, whether it's Manny Machado or this one or the Bryce Harper deal with Philadelphia, might be a little bit late for the Red Sox here,
well,
with Mookie Betts.
And so that's what I wonder. And you know, we talked about this earlier. I look at this and I say, wow, the price tag just went up a lot for Betts, which means the Red Sox should have been more proactive here. You know, he's not represented by Scott Boras. I don't pretend to know a ton about his agents, but Boras is obviously notorious for his guys getting to market, Machado, Harper, players like this. I think what the Red Sox should have done, and I voiced this at the time, is now that Harper and Machado have gotten these deals, well, put it in front of Betts. Put something close to those deals, Machado's AAV or Harper's total money, in front of Mookie Betts and say, yep, you're not a free agent for two more years. And yeah, you haven't played ball with us in arbitration or really any deal we've put in front of you. But now this will make you the highest paid player in baseball, whether it's AAV or total cash, your pick. And maybe his agents haggle with you and they put another proposal in front of you and you split the difference, right? I don't think it would have been $430 million. I don't think that's the number they would have come up with. So the Red Sox dragging their feet, if they dragged their feet and attempted to lowball him, which is crazy to say with the kind of money we're talking about, may wind up costing them in the long run. And I get that it's baseball, and I get that owners like Artie Moreno and John Henry make money hand over fist, and they can afford it, and there's no salary cap in place, and I don't think the luxury tax is overly punitive. That said, the last known contract offer we have from the Red Sox was after Mookie Betts' 2017 season, before he was MVP last year, so obviously the price tag has gone up. They offered him 8 years, $200 million, and he said no to that. If you turned around after an MVP season and said, we'll make you the highest paid player in baseball, I have a hard time believing that he would have shot that down. Maybe he would have. Maybe the Red Sox went to him with that, but that would have been the play, I think, because now what are we looking at, $400 million? $400 million for Betts? Is it higher than that?
I mean, ultimately, I guess you're not wrong. They should have gone to him. They should have made that offer. They probably didn't. I guess I'm just not getting worked up because I still don't believe he would have accepted that offer. And maybe...
He turned down 8 years, $200 million after his down 2017. So,
which was a pretty good offer then, right?
It was.
Now, the things that have changed since then, obviously we saw this last free agent market where a lot of these people languished. In the end, Machado, in the end, Harper got big fat contracts, probably not what they were hoping for, but certainly very big. But Trout, I don't know that anyone saw this coming down the line. I think Betts might say no if for no other reason than there was no more urgency on his to do it right now than anyone else, right? I mean, nobody knew that this Trout contract was necessarily coming. So maybe they did go to him, and maybe he said, well, we'll talk about it later on in the season, and now that dynamic has changed. But ultimately, I still believe he's going to free agency, despite everything that we have seen this past season. And, you know, we've got a whole nother free agent offseason to come before he would hit it. Everything that we've ever seen from him indicated that that's his intent. And I don't know that that's changed because of everything we've seen. So I think if they had made him this offer this year, he probably would not have taken it.
That's maybe true. And maybe they have offered it. That seemed like that was the play. All right, you're the next guy to get paid, Mookie. Let's give you what Harper's getting. Let's give you what Machado's getting. And now hopefully you're not giving him $400, $410, $430 million.
I think you have to be around that number, though, around 400.
Now?
Now. You do. Oh, yeah, now. So good for Betts and his agents because he's going to get paid. Andrew in Attleboro on Mike Trout. Go ahead, Andrew.
Murray.
Yes?
Love you. Your take on Trout is obnoxious. I mean, he's a humble athlete who wants to actually stay with the team that signed him initially. I mean, yes, he's getting paid, but that's admirable. You can't have it both ways. You want him to be a diva in his fur coat and hold out like a Revis or an AB or a Le'Veon Bell, you know, those type of athletes, Boston doesn't like, I don't like. So you can't have it both ways. This is admirable. He's an excellent player, deserves what he's getting. I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks, Andrew. He's certainly deserving of what he's getting. And I, even though I mocked it on Twitter earlier, and I said it like, oh, he's this generation's Mickey Mantle. Well, he is. I mean, just in terms of his production on the field,
yeah.
He's deserving the two MVPs. Didn't do crap in the one time he got into the playoffs. It batted less than 100 with a home run and one RBI against the Royals a few years back. But yeah, be that as it may, Mookie Betts isn't all that great in the postseason either. One token home run, good defense, and they finally win a World Series last year. Yay. With Mike Trout, though, no, I'm sorry. If I'm him and him in his shoes, and I don't need him to wear fur coats and be out, like, you know, chasing skirts and doing blow like and getting banged up like Mickey Mantle used to back
right.
in the day, but at least have a little bit of personality and show me that you'd maybe like to win in a bigger market and get the hell out of the Anaheim Angels. It's one of the most irrelevant franchises, not just in baseball, but in all of sports. But if you really wanted to win, you'd want to go to a bigger market. You'd want to play in Philadelphia. You'd want to play here or with the Yankees or with the Dodgers, a team that actually does matter in California, maybe even the Giants. Get out of Anaheim. This was about comfort and money to me. I think that there's a gutlessness with that guy. And him signing this deal today, while he's now an extremely rich man, shows me it's more about comfort and just, this is the right thing to do.
There should be something on the scale.
Is there a killer instinct in Mike Trout? Doesn't feel like it with a deal like this today.
If he has it, you wouldn't know it. There has to be something in between Antonio Brown and Mike Trout. Right?
Yes.
Like, it's just, right, we're criticizing both ends of the spectrum. I don't know if that makes it inconsistent. It's just there's got to be a happy medium where we want our athletes in the middle, where you're a team player, but you also have a little bit of personality. I don't know why that's that hard of a concept.
I mean, ultimately, if he were more of a vocal leader, then I would say, fine, stay in Anaheim, right? And do what you can to, like, I'm not a crazy Bryce Harper fan, but I have no doubt that that guy is going to go into the Phillies clubhouse and announce his presence with authority.
Agreed.
And if he feels as though management isn't doing what needs to be done to make that team a contender, he's going to let them know. I don't feel like Mike Trout does any of that. Mike Trout's like, oh, okay, guys. Yeah, okay.
And whatever you need from me, I'll just be over here. I'm Mike Trout. Would you like to buy a sub from Subway? They're delicious.
Hey, by the way, one of your free agent targets has been signed.
Oh, what do we have some breaking news? What's happened?
I don't know if it's like sounder worthy, but Randall Cobb off the market. He's going to the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, that's a good fit for them.
$5 million.
That's good money. One-year
deal, $5 million, according to Schefter.
Did they sniff it around? They tried to trade for him, reportedly, the Patriots did last season.
Yep.
Did they even have any kind of conversation with him?
I have not. If they have, I haven't seen it.
That's annoying. Ernest in the car is we're talking about Patriots wide receivers, and another one is gone. Randall Cobb goes to the Cowboys. Your thoughts, Ernest? Hi.
Yeah, hey, guys. So I have a theory about Julian Edelman and the Patriots and why the Patriots don't want to sign a high receiver or expensive receiver. And that's because you have Julian Edelman making, what, $5-6 million a year? I mean, just think about if they went out and got, let's say, Golden Tate at $10 million. What does that say to Julian Edelman?
Okay, but we keep getting calls about this. They tried to do that with Adam Humphries. So obviously they're not that afraid of that. They tried to go out and pay Adam Humphries at a higher number than Edelman. So they're not thinking that way.
Good point.
Cole Beasley, they apparently had some interest in too.
I don't know the figures on Beasley. I don't know the figures on Tate, but we know with Humphries, they were in on Humphries at a level higher than what they're paying Edelman. So I don't think that's a bad point by the caller, but the Patriots aren't adhering to that, not at all.
Let's go to Jim in Beverly as we go back to the Celtics. He has a thought on Brad Stevens. Go ahead, Jim.
Hey, what's up, Big Jim?
Hi.
What's up, Jonesy? Good to have you on during the day.
Hi, yeah, it's great, yeah.
So on Opie, I mean Brad Stevens, this guy, I don't think he can manage these big personality people. He hasn't proved it. He won't tweak the starting lineup. He won't make changes. He doesn't leave anyone else, even up threes at any time. I loved him last year. This year, not so much.
All right, thanks for the call. Yeah, it's been a bad year for him, and it seems like some of the personalities have been too big for him at times. And again, my bigger issue as of late is the timeouts that come 5 minutes after a run. It's like,
yeah, because the person that, in fairness, what coach can really handle Kyrie?
Probably none.
Like, When they won, you know, it was Ty Lue, but Kyrie a year later wasn't talking to his team. Like, he was, like, freezing out his teammates and
right.
stuff. So I don't know if there's any coach that can handle a personality like Kyrie. I'm with you. It's more What's wrong with your rotations? What's up with the timeouts? That I think, is a bigger criticism for him.
All right, so what is the absolute most distracting noise that could be made after an official asks a crowd at a sporting event for quiet? You see this at golf a lot, with tennis, like, shh, you know, the play's about to resume. They resume. Maybe like a scream, a burp, a random baba booey. For those of you that are still Stern fans, like, that's what would come to mind, right? Well, no. We have the answer. What is the most distracting noise that could be made after an official asks a crowd at a sporting event for some quiet? Shh, no. The play is about to resume. We have the answer for you next in the final word here on Felger and Mass.
This is Felger and Mass
on 98.5.
The Sport. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger's expert analysis.
Not from this talk radio crazy.
Maz's hard-hitting questions.
What am I, like the freaking abrasive police here?
The callers bringing knowledge to the table.
Maz, the adults are talking.
It's time to recap this four-hour show in 4 minutes. It's the final word on Felger and Maz on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
The final word being brought to you by Town Fair Tire. For the guaranteed lowest price on tires, go to Town Fair Tire, because nobody beats Town Fair Tire.
Nobody.
I am going to defer hand completely over the intro of the final word to you, Big Jim Murray.
All right. So I asked the question before the commercial break. What is the most distracting noise that could be made after an official asks a crowd at a sporting event for quiet? You've seen this, obviously, at golf, at tennis. Someone burps, a scream, a baba booey. For those that remember Stern, the show's not funny anymore, but still, people will still yell that out. My understanding is this audio might be a little bit old, but I just found out about this today. Popped up in my feed on Twitter. I'd never heard it before. I think it's amazing. It's not any of those sounds. How about a big, juicy bomb that someone drops in the audience at a snooker match in the UK? Snooker, it's like pool, but more British.
Yeah, those can be some pretty heated matches, too. Those get intense.
Well, this is a guy setting up for a crucial shot in snooker, and then this happens. Man, just pull that back, Jimmy. This is like the British ESPN coverage of the big snooker match, getting ready for a proper shot here, and then you really beef that up there, no pun intended. And that's a good one. That's dad worthy, right?
Yeah, it's like Mike Ditka on the Sunday Night Countdown or the Sunday Countdown show. Yeah,
but it's the commentary that really makes it. Go ahead.
Nice. A bit of noise in the crowd there. I don't know what that sounded like. It sounded a bit strange. Well, the last time I heard a noise like that, I think it was playing against Big Bill Werbenick many years ago.
And so for him to mention whoever Big Bill Werbenick, he must be a giant man with loud farts.
Yeah,
I remember that one. He had some real rippers.
You don't want to be standing behind Big Bill Werbenick. Everybody knows that.
Go ahead.
Settle down now, please. Thank you.
Everybody had a laugh at the beef.
This is a really important part of the match because after putting that yellow, I mean, Ronnie's just having a look up to the commentary box and having a little smile, but this now, he's 28 points behind, and in some ways you deserve to win a frame after a putt like that.
Well, I'm not sure what's happened this time, but very rarely do you get that in the auditorium. Maybe there's someone maybe not just feeling too well at the moment, but the camera's giving the old evil eye there.
And then he ends up defeating the gentleman there, and he's not rattled by the smell or the sound. But, boy, it's worth – yeah, that's worth cracking up for. I have the mind of a child. I make no apologies
that
for
is,
it.
You want to talk about,
that
you know –
it's deep, it's bassy, it's beefy.
That's gutting it out, though. That's being able to execute under those circumstances.
And I feel like the woman is definitely a mom. Like, that was such a mom reaction.
Zero humor.
Quiet, please.
Everybody settle down now.
Somebody light a match.
Well, I'm not sure what's happened this time, but
as the smell starts to emanate throughout the crowd, that's what's starting to happen.
This now, be 28 points behind, and in some ways you deserve to win a frame after a pot like that.
Real mature.
Hey, pooted. All right, so concludes the show for today. Thank you to Jimmy Stewart producing, as always. Same for Billy Lanny behind the glass, for Marshall Hook and Adam Jones. Always a pleasure, fellas. Hook, enjoy your mystery vacation. This, just real quick, explain to the people what you're doing.
So I've asked my wife to book a trip for the two of us, just the two of us, 4 days. I have no idea where we're going.
Has she told you what to pack?
Wow. No. So what I'm doing when I get home tonight is I'm laying out both cold and warm weather clothes and then leaving the room. She will pack
She's
the bag
one or the other.
And then stow the other one away, so I don't even know which climate of clothes that she has packed.
Wow.
And then we're going to go to the airport, and I'm going to see exactly how far I can get. The challenge will be to get by the gate without knowing where the plane's going. I don't know that I'm going to make it that far.
I think that's fun, and it's exciting, and I think it's such a great idea. And you got a hell of a marriage.
I don't know. Seriously.
That's keeping it fresh and fun. Good for you. Have fun wherever you're going.
What happens if you get off the flight and it's like Cleveland?
I got to tell you, four days without my kids, I'm going to be like, we could be flying to Worcester. I'd be all right.
That's a good point.
Well, go have fun wherever you're going. And Jones, I'll see you tomorrow. Yep. We'll have Tim McCone in that spot. Coming up next, Kristen Arkan taking it up until the Bruins pregame. What's up, Arkan?
Quick 30 minutes. Maybe I heard this differently. It sounds like Hook might not come back from this trip. Like, are you totally sure your wife's not going to murder you on this vacation? Because that's what it sort of sounds like.
Yeah,
you don't know
where
you're going. She's packing your bag. Like, there's a lot of red flags here, Hook. I'm just
good
saying.
Point.
I mean, to be fair, I never fully confirmed that she's coming on the flight with me. But I think that she is. I think she is.
Well, good luck, buddy. I hope we see you in a couple weeks.
Yeah. What are you doing for the time that you have?
We're going to start off with this Mike Trout news, what that means for Mookie Betts. And do you want to sign Mookie Betts for $450 million, which is probably what it's going to cost right now. We'll go over that and a couple Bruins thoughts. Pasternak's back tonight, according to sources. We'll see him for the first time in a while. And then we'll talk after the game. So there you go.
All right. Arkan takes you up until the Dunkin' Donuts Bruins pregame shows. It's Bruins and Islanders tonight. Catch it here with Judd Surratt, Bob Beers on 98.5 of Sports. Hope enjoy the rest of your evening. Hook's got you on the headlines. Talk to you tomorrow at 2. Bye.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.